So this is a story about AI and comedy. Let's see what it can do.
An AI and a robot walk into a bar. AI says, I'll have something strong. Robot says, say my battery's at 3%.
I mean, artificial intelligence is our digital assistant. It's writing our assignments. Sometimes we use it as a psychologist. Not to be mean, it's not really that funny yet. An Australian researcher is trying to change this, though, trying to work out whether AI robots could do stand-up comedy, the toughest form of comedy, not just writing jokes, but delivering a comedy routine that leaves you in stitches. You are about to hear from this researcher and from a professional comedian, but tell me, do you think AI could make you laugh? And I would also really love to hear about the last thing that made you really, really laugh. With me is Dr. Robert Walton, a research fellow in the Faculty of Fine Arts and Music at the University of Melbourne, and Nicolette Minster, a comedian and writer. You might have seen her on The Weekly with Charlie Pickering. Robert, I've got to start with you. You have received a $500,000 grant to train robots in stand-up. Please tell me about this project.
Of course, and thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Well, the project is really, it's not so much about stand-up. It's more broad about comedy in general. And the kind of central idea is that we do actually find robots funny and we find AI funny when they do things wrong, when they fail.
Okay.
And can machines perform comedy that we actually believe is real and authentic is the question, not just accidental humour from their failures.
So how do you even begin to study that?
Well, that's a good question. And to be honest, we haven't actually started yet. There's been all this interest. I've just got the grant. I've been working with robots for about 5 years and I've been working in theatre and performance for 20 odd years, making all different kinds of things, including work with AI and stuff. But now, from working with the robots that I have and have access to through the University of Melbourne, it's really clear that they glitch all the time and they're the funniest and most endearing when they do things wrong. And so there's a bit of this paradox, you see, that we actually want them to be funny, but humans have already decided, because they're robots, that they can never really accept their humour as funny. But we keep seeing AI and robots in shows, and people are interested in figuring out how to make it possible. But really the question is, can they ever perform something that's believable and genuinely funny on their own? And so I'm trying to figure that out, and it comes down to a question of believability, I think.
Nicolette, I'm really interested to hear Robert say this thing about them being endearing when they sort of get it wrong, because for me that is, like, that's slapstick.
Yeah, I guess it is slapstick. And I'll be honest, you know, obviously I come into this at quite like with a sceptical worldview, given that it's $500,000. Like, I'm not charging enough for tickets. Like, that is clear. That is my first takeaway. That is my first learning. So you can thank the University of Melbourne for that. I guess it is slapstick. And look, comedy is, as Robert has just said, is such a broad church. And also, you know, we're talking about, you know, audience here. We're talking about it because it's, in many ways, it has nothing to do with the robot and everything to do with the audience and the context. And, you know, a comedy audience is already there and willing and open and wanting to have a good time and to celebrate the performer they see in front of them. And look, I've also seen many human stand-up comedians glitch on stage. And it's been a fine line between hilarious and harrowing.
I'm thinking about context, like you just saying that, Nicolette, and that's kind of what you're trying to teach the robots, Robert. It's like non-verbal communication, all of the things that aren't the joke itself.
Yes, I think Nicolette's absolutely right. The ability to do comedy is not equally distributed around the population, let's say.
I'm flattered.
Humans are giving it a red hot go, but we know that not everybody is so great anyway. So we already know it's actually really difficult and all over the place. So I suppose, yeah, what I'm looking at is, well, one of the realizations was that AI, as we understand it from your chatbots and things, they can kind of produce a joke because they have scraped every single joke that's ever been written down anywhere, and they can regurgitate it for you. However, that is completely different to telling a joke. And the idea that you would be funny just because you've read every joke ever, and instead you've never actually looked at how anyone actually performs a joke, is what the big gap is, I think. And so this idea of, so we've got to think about timing, reading the room, reading the space between people, choosing how to intervene into that moment, how to choose material that should come at that time.
You're talking about listening.
It's listening, but it's also visual humour and understanding about the body to a certain extent, you know. But a big bit is listening, yeah.
Because I think what I hear is there's a, when you talk about it, there's you talk about it with a sense of finality about the job and about what comedy is. And I don't know that you, I mean, I think you can be programmed effectively to listen and respond, but it's about, that's never a finite thing. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, arguably we're constantly looking at improving ourselves, and I wonder how something, I mean, I understand that AI is constantly interrogating itself. You know, I joke about the fact that there is nothing more anxious than an AI. It's interrogating itself constantly when you ask it a question. So people are like more worried about AI coming for our jobs. I'm more worried about it coming for my mental health plan. But, you know, the idea that there will be a final outcome for something that is constantly working and continuing to think, I'm curious to see
absolutely
how you do that. And I'm also, you know, in order for you to really present this with final believability, I can't believe it's a robot. The minute that I know it's a robot, I'm already being judgmental.
Absolutely. And interestingly enough, there is lots of research that says exactly the same thing. It's called the anchoring effect. And basically, these people did this cool like little experiment, these psychologists, where they had a picture of a person and a picture of a robot, and you can move the limbs and the parts across from each other. And so it's like what's like the Exquisite Corpse or whatever that game is called. And they go, well, if you take this leg over here, and it's just, well, that's a person with a robot leg. Is that a robot or is that a person? And basically, they did all the different combinations. And even... And what they found was, if anyone has a sense that this thing that they're looking at is a robot in any way, they limit what it's possible of doing and limit its potential to be human.
Wow.
This is what I mean about the
paradox. There'd be a couple of Paralympians who would disagree with that.
Exactly. I don't know if you're allowed to have robotic features if you're a Paralympian, because...
Well, that's probably... you heard it here first. I'll tell you what. I've really just messed things up for the IOC.
Well, this is not something we're going to get into today, unfortunately, lest we get a complaint from the IOC. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. I'm talking to Dr. Robert Walton from the University of Melbourne, trying to teach robots about comedy, not just the jokes themselves, but all of the other parts that make comedy funny and human, I think, a comedian, Nicolette Minster. I still think you're a human. Bert loves Kitty Flanagan. Love her humour because of the power of observation of people. Meg says she had a big belly laugh yesterday. We live 300 kilometres inland. My son works at Business A on the western side of the road. Business B is across the road on the eastern side. His colleague resigned saying he'd found a job closer to the coast. The next week, they found out he was working at Business B. That's funny. And Mark's wondering how AI will handle being heckled. Well, first, I want to know from the human comedian, how do you handle hecklers? What can Robert learn from you about how to teach his robots?
I think I've discovered that hurt people hurt people. So often if I'm being heckled, I'll just offer them a hug.
See, that's great. That is funny. Robert, put it into you. The machine.
Yeah.
That's mine!
It might scare people if the robots kind of jump off the stage and offer the hug.
I find this so interesting that people are really sceptical about AI being funny because, of course, the antithesis of that is AI being threatening. And no one wants to pour $500,000 into can we make you scared of this machine? So I see why it's so appealing.
I think what's interesting about your research, Robert, is that in addition to sort of trying to figure out if we can make robots funny, you're really trying to make them disarming and charming, and that there might be other practical applications for the work that you're doing, like in caring settings.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they don't have to be as funny as a comedian, for a start. Let's maybe not.
Robert's
kind of
flattering
get there.
Me now at this point.
The robot in the room that's staying silent is not saying anything. But when you're thinking about the potential in the future for robots to be more within our lives, and one of, you know, there are people at the university and universities all over the world looking at, robots in care settings. And sometimes that kind of care is intimate care, and sometimes the situation's a bit awkward. If a robot or an AI just knew how to kind of make the situation a little bit better by saying the right thing at just the right moment to alleviate the situation or to provide someone with more dignity, that's kind of one of the uses that we're thinking about as well, that kind of goes on from this. It's not about it being like necessarily profoundly funny. It's about creating this situational awareness into which it can understand the human situation a little bit more and maybe cheer somebody up or make something a little bit more palatable.
It's really nice to hear that this entire time I've been a frontline healthcare worker.
No, but
and also, there are so many comedians who are out there making jokes about the fact that their parents thought they should have been a doctor. Turns out they are.
But don't you think there's something about human-to-human care that when someone says something in the moment to alleviate the tension, it feels very responsive to that moment. And part of what comes from that is this feeling of being seen by another human. The idea that you could program that and that what you're getting is something that is almost like it's not preloaded, it's responsive, but it's still kind of been encoded and decoded in some sort of way really does feel a little uncanny to me, Robert.
It's deeply creepy. I appreciate that. I mean, one of the things that the system that sees us the most, if you like, is our social media feeds, which are run by AI. And they see us in a way that's terrifying, that often knows what we want before we know what we want.
There is a text here from someone saying it would be really funny to see a robot doing a bit on humans and their funny flesh bags like a robot Seinfeld. I hope you're taking notes there, Robert, but we do need to leave it there. Thank you so much, Robert and Nicolette. Dr. Robert Walton is a research fellow in the Faculty of Fine Arts and Music at the University of Melbourne. And Nicolette Minster is a comedian and a writer. You might have seen her on The Weekly with Charlie Pickering.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music, and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.